Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Vivia Charles and Aniceto Charles. We talk about their partnering as a mother and son on the authentic East Waco restaurant, True Jamaica, ways their community has supported them after a horrific restaurant fire, and how the growth along the Elm Avenue corridor mirrors their time living in Northern Virginia. But first, it's the Business Review with CJ Jackson.
Chaos to calm. I'm CJ Jackson, and this is the Business Review. Stress is a health epidemic, and remaining focused and calm under pressure can be difficult. Dr. Sharon Melnick, business psychologist and founder of The Stress Resilience, shares some tools to shift from chaos to calm.
Stress has an enormous impact. There are things that people could be doing to feel more empowered, whether that's to take care of themselves physically, mentally, emotionally. We only feel stress when there's aspects of situations that feel out of our control. The more we can focus on what we can control, the less we will experience stress. Meaning, put your time and energy and attention into really being as effective as you could be at the things that you can control. So the more we can focus on what we can control, the less we will experience stress.
Dr. Melnick suggests practical ideas to implement to shift from fear to focus.
Start being intentional. You want to think about, what is the outcome that I want to create? And who do I need to show up as in order to make that outcome happen? Instead of saying to yourself, why is this happening to me? You can ask, how might this situation be happening for me, not to me? In order to shift from fear to focus, you can always apply the three things that you can control. You can always control your physiology, your psychology, and your problem solving. And when you do that, you can have success under stress.
The Business Review is a production of Livingston & McKay and the Handkammer School of Business at Baylor University.
The Business Review can be heard every Thursday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on KWBU, Waco's NPR. I'm now joined in studio by Vivia Charles and Aniceto Charles. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. We're happy to be here.
You guys are well known in the community for being the owners of True Jamaica, which is a true, authentic Jamaican restaurant in East Waco. But I'd love to know a little bit about your history and how you ended up deciding Waco would be the place to start this business.
Well, truly through my spiritual journey, Waco, not only did I, of course, watch HGTV and saw Chip and Joanne, but just through my spiritual journey and me and my husband's journey in business and just life, I actually felt the Lord tell me that Waco was the next place that we needed to go. My husband was going through illness, but he was very much like, okay. Like he had been in a lot of our marriage, we just explored many things and tried so many things together. And the impetus of bringing a Jamaican restaurant to Waco actually started in Northern Virginia, where we opened a small Jamaican carry-out restaurant. So yeah, we were just like, okay, let's see what the kids think.
I guess in my life, I was in a different time. My father was ill, and I bought a house close to mom and dad so I can kind of help out. But I was working at a software company, SAP, for many years, and I worked from home, so it was easy for me to kind of help. But one day they said, hey, we're thinking about moving to Texas. And I was like, okay, where? We're thinking Waco. And I was like, all right, well, I'm down. I just need to see what's going on down there, you know, because I didn't watch as much HGTV. And I would say that in my path, like I've done a lot of conferences with SAP and Ernst & Young, and I always meet somebody from Waco. So I've met Devers out of town. I've met a couple of the department health heads out of town. And I'm not talking about Texas. I'm talking about London, Florida, Chicago, D.C. area.
Wow. So Waco really travels.
So there was something, and you know, it was kind of funny. It's like, okay, the person that introduced me to my current girlfriend, I also met her out of town as well. So it was, there's a lot of links for me. So God has a way of putting breadcrumbs in your path. So I'm just following the path, and I'm happy I did.
You guys are not African-American, quote-unquote. You're Jamaican. You're from Jamaica. What was your experience like moving to Waco and being Jamaican specifically? Have you felt embraced by this larger African-American community in East Waco?
Definitely. First, what happened was as people saw us showing up at that building at 937 Taylor every day, first of all, a lot of people started stopping. Black people, white people. Just started stopping and asking because they were like genuinely like, wow, what else is coming? Something else is coming.
Because that building had been vacant for a long time.
A long time. So definitely we felt welcomed right away, right away. And then I think as you know, the United States has grown in so many ways. There's so many different people here. I would say most people have kind of turned their hearts and minds to like, okay, even if it's just the food that they try of other, you know, people from other places. So I think anytime you say Jamaica, I think people are open. First brings the beach and, you know, palm trees to mind, so what's not to be happy about? So I think people are always eager to like delve in, see what's a little different about you. So no, we felt very, very welcome. Yeah.
So I guess my answer is different. First, I'm a child of God, and I kind of walk that way in the sense that, yeah, I understand that skin is different, and I understand that culture is a bit different. I understand backgrounds are different. But I've always just been welcomed, and I've always been welcoming to others. Now, I would say that, like my mother said, just to piggyback off her, everybody's been very welcoming. I mean, I have people all up and down Central Texas like, hey, you know, I have a goat farm. If you need goat, and I'm like, yeah, I need a lot of goat. No, I can't do that much. But if you need a little bit, I have people that just come up and just, you know, I think the spirit of God has just kind of carried those people into our lives. Like we can talk about how we met, you know, and I think people sometimes get stuck in, hey, you're African-American, you're white, Caucasian, you're Hispanic, or you're Latino, or so truth be told, my mother is born and bred in Jamaica. You know, she's from Jamaica. My father is born and bred in Venezuela. He's Venezuelan. They're both citizens of the United States. I was born in Houston. I'm as Texan as you come, you know? It's like, okay. But I think when people stop thinking about, hey, you're African-American, you're Black, or you're Caucasian, just think people, that's when we all flourish and grow and start to merge cultures. And, you know, it's a different way of thinking.
Yeah, I would say largely I'm totally on board with that. I do think that's important, though, for people to just understand that race is just a convenient drawer that you can open up and put people in. Oh, I got my white people here, my black people here, my brown people here. And in reality, we're a menagerie, right? And particularly within the black community, there are so many people who are from Africa or from South America or Central America or the Caribbean that it's cool to see some of the unique things about your culture and as they come up. So Aniceto, growing up, even though you were in Houston, did you feel Jamaican growing up or did you feel American? Was that a hard...
So I felt all of the above. So I grew up loving baseball, and baseball, you know, unfortunately is not as loved as it was before, you know, I was born, I'm a 70s baby. So baseball is like this major thing with, you know, all the people. I always wanted to play shortstop when I was little, and I loved the Yankees at one point, and then I switched over to the Nationals. You know, I love Nolan Ryan. And I have, how you say, a deep heartfelt warmth for baseball. But baseball is played in Venezuela, and it's a predominant sport. It's not soccer. Like, everybody's like, oh, South America, Brazil, Argentina, Chile. No, we don't. We play soccer, but it's, like, not really. So in our house, my father and my mother both cooked. And my father would make curry chicken, jerk chicken. He would make oxtail. He would make pilaf or pilau. He would make Spanish dishes as well. So in our house, like, we learned all of it. It wasn't like, hey, we're just going to be Jamaican. We're just going to be American. So another thing, my father loved to cook. So Saturdays, Sundays, we make pancakes. I don't know, you know. Like, you go to most Latin houses, they don't make pancakes. It's kind of like, okay, we're going to make something else. I mean, I can make arepas and cachapas and all these different things that are typical breakfast food of Venezuela, but we make pancakes and we experiment, put some bananas and put some chocolate and just enjoy. But I felt all of it at my home, and I think I want my children to feel the same. So, and then once I get married, God willing. My mother wants it to happen sooner than later. But God willing, I'll be able to spread that same mixture of culture because, you know, it's a union, right? So, you know, you have all the characteristics of my mother, and then you have all the characteristics of my father, and then you blend and you have three babies. And those children are a mix of those two cultures. Sometimes they embrace it and sometimes they don't. But in our house, we embrace all of it. So I feel that I am American, Venezuelan, and Jamaican.
Vivia, I know your family had spent some time in Northern Virginia, and you had mentioned how while you were living there in, you know, the Alexandria area, it's really started to pop. And D.C., there were a lot of strong black business leaders and community that's there. And while you were living there, some of that started to spread into Virginia. Can you talk a little bit about the drivers for why that was happening? And are you seeing any sort of parallels with what was happening there and on a smaller scale, some of the growth that's happening in Waco?
Oh, definitely. One thing I've noticed, well, in my relationship with the Lord is that he works for me in my life through repetition. So as we noticed and would say to each other, me and my husband, look at the growth. When we came here, this was like, Woodbridge, Virginia was a quiet little country town. Washington, D.C. was going through a lot.
And what approximately years would this have been?
So this is 88.
Okay. That's when I was born in Alexandria, Virginia. Okay. 88.
So yeah, 88. And only because of my husband's director that he worked under, where we introduced to St. Luke's Church in Washington, D.C. So no traffic. Sundays, we went to church every Sunday. We were involved in our church. But the children got to meet, like, people from that attended Howard University, older people that ran things, that were doctors, dentists, leaders in so many ways. So they were exposed to that. but definitely we saw how a place could grow. We opened a hair salon, which just morphed into this very interesting place that so many young people in Woodbridge got a chance to be in the hair business, be barbers, braiders, and feed their families. We were one of the largest black salons in Woodbridge, Virginia. So they got to see, and they were going to school with other people that their parents had businesses. If you went to a local Asian restaurant, it was a kid that from school, their parents owned it. So it really showed us that you can definitely be masters of your own journey. But they grew up seeing that all around them. And back then in the area, even if you went to Tyson's Corner, which was maybe 25-minute drive, you would still run into the same people that lived in your community. Because it was so people that you knew from school, their children's parents. So we really saw that community was so important. And not just your small community, but that's where we really started to think that this will replicate everywhere. And as the 2000s came, that's really what really concreted us, is that look how this place has changed. I mean, like, as 2012, 13, I remember feeling like going to the mall. I'm like, I used to know people. I'm like, now I don't know these people. It was such an interesting, and I thought I loved being in a huge city. But I was like, wow, it was really nice when I could run into, like, you know, people that I knew and stuff. So really, we started, it was in our hearts to really look around and see. We often thought, would it be Houston again? But, you know, you just talk, you just talk. But we knew we could replicate and that it would happen everywhere else.
Wow, that's a beautiful vision for Waco to be able to replicate some of that growth there. We're talking with Vivia Charles and her son, Aniceto Charles, owners of True Jamaica, which is a Jamaican restaurant in East Waco, right off Taylor Street. Aniceto, the business opened, and everybody was super gung-ho about getting to go have some really true, authentic Jamaican cuisine here in Waco. You guys experienced a devastating fire. And it's been amazing to see how the community, at least on social media, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the community has really come up and tried to support you as best they can, whether it's partnering with Phil Helberg at Helberg Barbecue and doing a collaborative lunch or participating in a GoFundMe. What have been your lasting memories of this really traumatic time for the business, and what's the trajectory?
Well, all I can say is we're extremely thankful. I mean, it was a shocker. You know, you get up and you get a call at like 2-3 in the morning, and they're like, hey, don't hang up. Your building's on fire. And, you know, you're like, oh, maybe it's a small fire, or maybe it's nothing major. Then you get there and you're like, it's really on fire. So that's not the lasting impression. I guess the lasting impression is the community and how they've really, you know, whether they've been praying, because I'll tell you right now, I think I say a prayer like pretty much every day with somebody, because I guess I'm the person that, like, I guess I'm the face, more of the face, and my mother is more of the voice. She's a extremely well-spoken woman, and people like to hear her speak. Me, on the other hand, I'm more of a warm and fuzzy kind of guy. I do talk a lot, but I would say I go to 4 different grocery stores. I go to the H-E-B, Belle Meade. I go to Walmart. I go to the H-E-B in Valley Mills. I go to the H-E-B in Woodway, and it doesn't matter which one I go to. People are like, hey, how's it coming? How's it going? We're praying for you. Hey, we're going to try and come, you know, go to the event that you guys do in fundraiser, because we've done a couple fundraisers. We're very thankful to Phil and his family, Phil and Yvette, you know, happy anniversary to them. You know, Phil actually called me, I think, the day after. So, you know, I was kind of back and forth on doing fundraisers and everything like that, because in my mind, I'm like, okay, if the Lord wants me to do it, it'll happen. And we didn't talk for about a month and a half, 2 months, because it's been about three months and some change. Still waiting for the insurance to do their part, and they're getting there. So we'll be back hopefully sooner than later. But, you know, Phil, the people from Balcones, the people from Waco Cha or Cha community, there's so many people that have reached out. I mean, look, the people at Guest Barbecue, they, hey, you need a kitchen? You need a restaurant? Hey, we're open. Don't worry about paying anything. Just come. And I think Waco is special in that sense where, you know, when something happens, the community rallies. And I think it's there's a deep love for being in Waco. And my love for Waco has grown even more than it was before, because I see people in a different light. Not that it was a bad light, but it was like, you know what? I know you have a business, but I haven't talked to you in a long time. I might come and eat at your restaurant. You might eat in my restaurant. Might see you once in a blue moon. But the love and the outreach is tremendous. Like, I get people calling to this day, hey, what do you guys need? You need us to help paint? And it's kind of like hard to say, well, I don't know what's going on right now, because we're still waiting for the insurance to kind of give us what we're doing. But I just think that, you know, there's so many beautiful people in Waco. From all different corners, like, I tell you no lie, like, people from the paper, people, construction people, people that, you know, even when I go to, like, the gas station, I'll get, like, hey, you know, I used to get that oxtail and that jerk chicken, I heard about it, hey, here's a $5, and, you know, it's kind of like, people really do care in Waco, and the love is tremendous. So
we know that character is revealed in crisis. Vivia, I wonder what you've seen from Aniceto over the last few months as he's tried to navigate this, and what your lasting impressions of him are going to be when you think back to this tough time.
Well, you know what? As a family, and because we've had businesses all their lives, when he applied to Jones, Revis, and Pogue in D.C. as a sophomore in high school, he put on his resume, because they told him, you know, he was interested in law in high school. He put on there that he was a maintenance engineer, because he would help his dad to tidy up the salon at night. So I think he's grown and developed in business. But let me just say to everyone, Aniceto really is the face of True Jamaica, the voice of True Jamaica. I am behind the scenes. For almost 30 years, I was in front of the scenes as a hair salon owner. I am proud to be behind the scenes, because all of his talents are being used. I'm literally all of them. So I am so proud. But he's seen us, his father and myself, go through, because in business you're always going to have ups and downs. And they've seen that we've just always prayed and just kept going, like, it's going to work out. It's going to work out. And I have to say, I see him and his sister behave in the same way. They don't just, like, fold up. They're like, okay, there's another way. So I'm so proud that he's like my partner in this amazing journey in a brand new place. Because right away, every human being he met in Waco, he had their number or their card, or, you know, it was like amazing.
Yeah, he's a hyper connector. I remember going to city meetings with you years ago, Aniceto, and you had been looking at that at that building for a while. I wonder now that you guys have been established, what your impressions are of the changes that are coming to East Waco, and particularly this Elm Avenue corridor. The city has been pouring a ton of money into doing streetscape improvements. There is a beautiful outdoor amphitheater that soon will be hosting a farmer's market every Wednesday, which is going to be incredible. But all of that growth comes with change, and it's really tempting to conflate growth with prosperity. Are we growing just to get bigger, or are people actually getting more prosperous, and are we helping people have better outcomes, whether it's financially or educationally? I wonder what you guys think the changes that you've seen over in East Waco, are they beneficial? Are we pointing the right way? How do you sort of suss through all that?
Okay, now I have to say part of raising them in a very, and I'd say Northern Virginia is a very affluent community. We raised them to be people of service. You know, I always told them from they were little, I'm talking little, I was kind of wacky mom. It's not about you. It's not about you. So they've been raised in that, and being in service, Boy Scout, being in leadership roles at church, at school. Part of what our heart was about coming to Waco and that God showed us Waco is that we could be in a place where maybe we could serve a community that really needed serving. Although right now it seems like the community's helping us.
That's how it works.
Yeah. But, and us landing in East Waco, the thing that I would say most often, I would look at Enesado or when I talked to my daughter, I'd be like, God knew. And as we saw things start to grow, we were like, wow. But I think always in the back of our minds, we're like, how is this going to help the people that were here? You know? So that's really the biggest part of it. Like, how is this going to help the people that were here?
Okay. I think that I've always been a proponent of change and growth, especially when it's positive. I think that Waco has done a good job, a great job, actually, at, you know, trying to tie all the communities together. I think there are some gaps that are missing. Like, for example, a lot of the ownership of property and real estate, houses and everything like that, there's a lot of things that can help them. And I think Waco's getting there, but they haven't gotten there fully yet. I do think that the influx of businesses, especially when there's no land and, I mean, there's no progress going on, definitely we want businesses because businesses can help the economics, create jobs and everything like that. So I'm very thankful. I just want to be a part of it all.
Aniceto Charles and his mother, Vivia, are the owners of True Jamaica on Taylor in East Waco. It was such a treat to get to talk to a mother and son, and particularly Vivia, a woman like yourself here during Women's History Month. So thank you for sharing some of your history and story with us, and we cannot wait to continue supporting you guys and go check out the new shop when it's back up and running.
Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Yes.
You have
a
blessing.
Look forward to that.
Bless you and continued blessings.
Thank you. Thanks to Vivia and Aniceto Charles, and to you for tuning into episode 146 of Downtown Depot here on Waco Public Radio. You can find me in between episodes on Instagram and Facebook at Waco Business News. And join me back here on Waco's NPR for another conversation with an inspiring small business owner, civic leader, or engaged citizen sparking Waco's revitalization. I'm Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.